Morning. Today's daf in Masechet Anida is daf Lamed He. And but of course, when I say Lamed He, I really mean, of course, Lamed Vav. But we're on Lamed He, so for us it's Lamed He. Okay. We continue talking about two parts of today's daf. We talk about the differences between a Zav and a Balkari, halachic differences, actual physical difference between the two, and then we move on to discussing in detail Dam Tahor. Okay, those are two parts of today's daf. Let's go over what we discussed yesterday. Okay, so for a man, there's a tumah that comes that generates by him having a discharge out of his organ, and there are two different types of discharges that he can have. It's one is called the zav, and the other one is called a balkari. Now they are physically different than one another. Now, promises I've been making over the years in terms of the Gemara is going to talk about the differences, that's actually today's daf, meaning all those years of promises. Today's daf actually goes over there are physical differences in terms of both the way they come out of the male organ and their coloration. Okay, but they're different shades of white. In other words, essentially they're both white, just a question of shading and it's a question of how they came out. Okay, but aside from that, however, there are going to be big halachic differences between whether it's a zav versus a balkari. Let's just quickly review the basic halachas. A man has one discharge of ziva, so now he's tamei. Now, halachically speaking, that ziva discharge that comes out of him is, A, makes him tamei, and B, it itself is tamei as well, meaning the actual discharge itself is an avatum, it's going to be a source of tumah. And that's if it comes out one time. What if it comes out a second time? So now he's what's called the Zav Gamur. He's in a more definitive, more absolute Zav, which now means the following. First of all, in order for him to become Tahor, he has to count Shiva Nikim, has to count seven clean days. Okay? Number two is that the actual discharge that comes out now is going to be both Tami, both Bimaga uVimasa. Meaning that only on the first time that it comes out, it's tummy only bimaga, only when you touch it. But now, the second time that it comes out, you're going to be, meaning the actual discharge itself, is going to be tummy both when you touch it and when you carry it. So it's tummy bimaga uvimasa. And fine. And also, another important point is that now with the second discharge, and now that he's a Zav Gamur, so now that he has the full status of being a Zav, so he now is going to transmit what's called Tumas Medras. We've discussed this a number of times. So that if he sits down on something that's meant to hold him and meant to support him, so the item is going to be tummy to the same degree that he's tummy. So he's an avatoma. The chair that he sits on is also going to be now an avatoma, and that's what's called Tumas Medras. By the first issuance of his Zav, he's not a Zav Gamor, he's tummy, but he doesn't give off Tumas Medras. Tumas Medras only is created only upon that second discharge. What do you gain now by a third discharge? So what you gain by a third discharge of him being a Zav, he's already a Zav Gamor, is that with a third discharge now, he has to count Shiva Nikim, plus he also has to bring Karban. At the end of the 7 days of counting, meaning on the eighth day, he's going to have to go to the base of Mikdash, he's going to have to bring a Karban, and then is he going to be fully Tahor with the ability to go into the base of Mikdash, and he himself be allowed to eat Karban. Well, just one at a time. It's okay, just one at a time. Once he had a discharge of Shiv Nikim, that's not going to be good. That's going to now undo all the days that he counted. He's going to have to start counting again.
But for the first discharge, also 7 days or no 7 days?
For the first discharge, no 7 days. Meaning 12 on the mikvah, wait until nightfall, and then he's fine. Now, when the Torah presents to us, and let me read the pasuk, it's important. When the Torah presents to us these halachas, before I read the pasuk and before I do this, now let's talk about shechvat zera. Now shechvat zera, so that's a seminal discharge. So by shechvat zera, so again, he who discharges the shechvat zera is going to be tameh, and the shechvat zera itself is also going to be tameh. Do you remember a long time ago, Masechet Anida? Not that long ago, but earlier in the Masechta, we talked about how, there was a pasuk that we quoted. I don't want to spend time looking for it right now, but it's somewhere. It's somewhere in the first parak. We quoted a pasuk. Yeah, here we go. Daf Tes. The pasuk says, "Mi itein tahor mi tamei." Kadosh Baruch Hu can produce something tahor from something tamei. So one of the things we described that is what we did. Right, correct. We talked about that in the context of Paraduma, but we also said one of the pshatim the Gemara gave is that's talking about semen. It's talking about Zera, where it itself is Tameh, but then when inseminated into a woman, it produces a human being, which is tahor. So, okay, so zera itself is a dvar tameh. It itself is tameh. The man who discharged it, he himself is going to be tameh for the act of discharging it, right? It's a re'iya, like we talked about earlier. But over here, again, aside from the physical differences between the seminal discharge, the zera discharge versus the ziva discharge, on top of that, doesn't matter how many times he discharges Balkari. It's the same tumma. There's no shiva nikim. There's no tumas medris, meaning just a discharge of zera produces the same tumma again and again. And what's the tumma? It's a very simple tumma. You tell them the mikvah, you wait until nightfall, you become tahor. Okay? And the actual zera itself is tumma until it no longer is potent. All right. That's just basic background before we start off today's daf. And just to be familiar with the pasuk in Chumash, because really we need to know this vis-a-vis today's daf. All these halachos about Ziva and Balkari is found at the end of Parshas Mitzora. Perek Tezvav, 15th chapter of Sefer Vayikra. Right. Sorry. Beginning of the parak, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe v'al Aaron l'mor, Dabru b'nei Yisrael v'amar talem ishish ki yezav mi b'saro zavo tamehu. V'zos tiye tumaso b'zavo rar b'saro zavo echtim b'saro mi zavo tumaso hi. Going to come back to the psukim later this morning. Those are the psukim that describe a zav emission. And then we go on a little bit in the psukim. Okay. And pasuk tezvav the ish kisese mimene shechazer v'rachatz mamayim is called b'sarav v'tamei ad ha'arif. Okay, and the man has a shechva zera emission. So in other words, there are two parshios back to back. The first parsha deals with the zav emission, and the second parsha that comes up, parsha here meaning section of chumash, deals with shechva zera. Okay. All right. Where are we in the daf? We're on Lamed Hey right now. We're Lamed Hey Amud Aleph. We are towards the top. Okay. Yeah, we're up to the Rav Mitzamei B'Masa. I'm a Rav Huna. Okay. In the Gemara, it's not towards the top. It's more towards the middle of the daf. I'm a Rav Huna. Okay. Lamed Hey Amud Aleph. Rav Huna makes the following declaration. Riyah Rishona Shalzav Mitzamei Ba'Ones. Riyah Rishona Shel Zav is Metame even Ba'ones. Now, one fundamental difference between Zav versus Shechva Zera comes as a result of stimulation. Okay. Zav, not the case. In fact, the Zav cannot come out of stimulation. The Zav discharge that comes out of a man only will make the man Tame if it comes out without any assistance whatsoever, meaning simply on its own. If the man does anything to stimulate the Zav discharge, not the Shechva Zera discharge, talking about the Zav discharge, if a man does anything to stimulate it, it is not halachically a Ziva discharge. Okay, it has to come out on its own. So the Rav Huna now comes up with a novel ruling, which, by the way, is accepted. And that is the following. The Amar Rav Huna, Re'iyah Rishona Shel Zav Metame Ba'Onis. That the first issuance of the Zav, now remember how in the introduction we talked about how there are three discharges of a Zav, each one adding a new halachic dimension. Rav Huna now is offering the following thought, right? Halachic ruling, really. That the first issuance of the Zav that comes out of the man will make him Tamei, even if it comes out Ba'ones. Now, that's certainly not true by the second discharge, and it's certainly not going to be true by the third discharge. That their discharges 2 and 3 have to only come out on its own without any external stimulation. But for the first discharge of Ziva, Rav Huna is saying that the man will be tame and the actual issuance itself will be tame even if it comes out ba'ones. How does he arrive at that? So the Gemara gives an explanation. Shenemar zos tarasa zava sherti tzemei meneshech vazera. Because after going through all of this, the Torah at the very end of the parsha goes like this: Zos tarasa zav pasuk lamed beis. Zos tarasa zav asher titzene meim neshech vazera l'tamava. These are all the rules of zav and shech vazera, meaning that the Torah almost kind of equates the two. Now they're not the same, but the Torah kind of equates the two. So what Rav Huna is basically now going to say is that for that first discharge of zav, we're going to borrow the halachas of shech vazera. Shech vazera comes out of the person ba'ones, meaning with external stimulation. So for the first discharge of zav, even though it comes out with external stimulation, and even though if this was the second or third discharge, that would be nothing, but for the first discharge, we're going to treat it like shech vazera, in the sense that when it comes out, and even if it comes out through external stimulation, it still will make the man tame. Now, the Gemara says this is a difficult position to take. Let me finish reading his thought. Zos Torah says, "Vesher Titzen Meimene Shech Vazera." Ma Shech Vazera Metame Baones. Just like Shech Vazera is Metame when it comes out through external stimulation. Afri Rishon Shozav Metame Baones. Same thing is true regarding that first discharge of Zav. So Tashma, the Gemara says, "Oh, that's difficult. That's difficult to maintain." Consider the following. The Gemara here quotes a Mishnah. Mishnah in Zavim. I told you there's an entire Masechta dedicated to this topic of Ziva. Ra Riyah Rishon Abotkin Osal. Now, if he has his first discharge, says the Mishnah in Zavin, if he has his first discharge, so Bokin or so, we do an examination. Now, we're talking about a Ziva discharge, not a Shech Vazera discharge. You do an examination. Now, a simple question. What are you examining? Meaning, let's assume that we know it's Ziva. So, what kind of examination is the Mishnah talking about? So, my love of Tumah. So, ostensibly, says the Gemara, the examination that we're talking about is to see whether he's tame, whether he's not tame. Now, whether he's tame, whether he's not tame, what do you mean? If Rav Huna's right, he's always going to be tame. Meaning, let's say Rav Huna was wrong. Okay, let's start off with that assumption. So that means that the Ziva discharge is going to make him tame, but only if it comes out on its own. If there was external stimulation that caused it to come out, he's not going to be tame. If Rav Huna is wrong, I understand that Mishnah Zavim. I understand it very well. The Mishnah Zavim is telling me that I have to do an examination, meaning I have to ask him a very simple question. How did that Ziva come out? Was it stimulated to come out? And by the way, there are ways to get Ziva to come out, meaning not the same way that to get Zera to come out, but there are ways of stimulating the body, certain foods that a person can eat, in order to get Ziva to come out. So we ask him the following question. Did you cause it to come out, or did it come out on its own? So then I understand the Mishnah in Zavim very well. But if Rav Huna is right, that for the first Zav discharge that comes out, he will be tame regardless of how it comes out, whether with or without stimulation, so then what's the Mishnah in Zavim talking about? You do a bedika. What kind of examination are we talking about? What's the point? Exactly. So wait just 1 second. So the Gemara says, lo, l'karban. So the Gemara says, no, you didn't understand that Mishnah in Zavim. I will explain to you the Mishnah in Zavim, assuming that Rav Huna is right. Yes, we're going to do an examination, but why are we going to do an examination? We're going to do it for the purposes of a karban. Because remember, the karban that is going to be offered by this person after having 3 discharges, that means that he has to have 3 Ziva discharges. So here we're going to do an examination now, only so that if and when he gets to a 3rd discharge, he's going to he's going to have to bring a karban. But in other words, it in of itself is going to be mitame, the man who had this discharge, regardless of whether it came out be'ones or shelo be'ones. Tashma. The Gemara says, we're going to read on in this Mishnah of him. Bishnia boshkenoso, the second time he has an examination, you do a bedika. Lamai. Now, ilim lakarban avalotamalo, ikra kami besarovalamachmason so. Now, here for the second examination, meaning here, it has to come out on its own. Meaning this is part of the very definition of a zav discharge. A zav discharge has to come on its own without external stimulation. So here, when the Mishnah says do a bedika, we know we're talking about the bedika being whether or not it came out with or without external stimulation. So the Gemara says, so now, follow me. We have the second part of this Mishnah that talks about the second discharge. And the Mishnah says they have to do a bedika. And we know what the Mishnah means. We know that the Mishnah means doing a bedika means whether finding out whether or not there was or there wasn't external stimulation. Because if there was external stimulation, this is not a Zav discharge. We simply don't count it. So now if that's the pshat in this part of the Mishnah, now we get to look back at the first part of the Mishnah. Meaning that we're doing the bedika for the Rishon, ostensibly it's the same type of bedika. So the Gemara now is arguing, if the bedika for the second discharge is to see whether there was external stimulation or not, so the bedika for the first discharge is the same bedika, whether there was external stimulation or not. Now, if all this is correct, once again, that doesn't bode well for Rav Huna. Because Rav Huna says that for the first stimulation, it is mitame, even if it was with an external stimulation. Midi iria, just wait one second, just give me a moment. Midi iria, hakadisa v'hakadisa. So the Gemara says, no, in other words, that's not how you have to learn the Mishnah. The Mishnah's two points can be two different points. Meaning the first part of the Mishnah about the first re'iyah, even though there is a bedika element involved, that bedika does not have to do with external stimulation. The second re'iyah has to do with external stimulation. So in other words, you don't have to understand each part of the Mishnah in the same manner. Each part of the Mishnah can be treated differently. Tashma. The Gemara says, okay, how about this? Rabbi Eliezer Omer Af Bishlishi, Bot Genoso Mipnea Karban. Rabbi Lazar says that when he has a third discharge, so you need to do a bedika. Why? Mipnea Karban. Because, remember now, that for a man who has three Zav discharges, now by the second one he's already a Zav Gamor. What does the third one introduce for us? The idea of Karban. So, but you have to do a bedika, so that he will bring a Karban. Now, now, you got to read Rabbi Elazar's words carefully. He says, do a bedika for the third one, mipnei hakarban, because of the karban. It sounds like, for the Tanakhama standpoint, all those bedikas that we were doing for discharge one and two was not for the karban, but was for the actual tuma itself. So in other words, again, it causes problems for Rav Huna.
Because you're trying to get three and you're
I agree with you. It's just that the way that the Mishnah is formulated, it sounds like Rabbi Elazar is coming in and saying, do a bedika for that third one because of the karban. Meaning it sounds like he's arguing with the Tanakhama. So if he's arguing with the Tanakhama, what's the Tanakhama's position? Again, it sounds like the Tanakhama is arguing that I was doing bedikas all along for the tumma component. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, Dekuli Alma Lekarban. Now the Gemara says, no. Everyone agrees, Ben, like what you just suggested. Everybody agrees that I'm doing the bedikas for the karban. Meaning I'm doing the bedika after one, after two, and after three, and I'm doing it all for the karban. Vahacha be'esim kamifilgi. There is a debate between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer, but it is a very fine-tuned debate. It's a very nuanced debate. Rabbanan, and it's a question of how to darshan. Rabbanan lo darsha esen, Rabbi Elazar darsha esen. The Chachamim darshan the word es, and Rabbi Elazar does not darshan the word es. We've seen this discussion of whether or not to darshan the word es, and we've seen it already many times. Right? Remember, we had that long discussion, not long, but popular discussion about how Rabbi Akiva had his thesis, every time the Torah says the word es, It comes to include something, Kabeit Es Avicha, the Es Imecha, and what is the S coming to include over here? So, right, including your older brother. So, right, and he got stuck, but when the Pasuk says, Es Hashem Elokecha Tira, you have to fear God. And what is the word S coming to include over there? And he got stuck, and he didn't know what to do with that S, and he stopped with his thesis, meaning he gave up on his doctorate thesis of darshaning every S in the Torah. Anyway, just moving along to our discussion over here, so the Gemara says that's exactly what's going on over here, whether you darshan the word S or whether you don't darshan the word S, and let's explain this a little bit better. Rabbanan lo darshi Esen. So the Chachamim don't darshan the word S. So now we go back to the very beginning of Perek Tezvav, and I read, Dabru b'nei Yisrael v'yamart alem, ish ish ki ezav b'saro, Zovo tamihu, vizos tiyeh tumasa b'zovo, rar b'saro et zovo, achtim b'saro mizovo, tameh tumaso hi. So the Rechachamim say like this, hazav chada, zovo tarte, lezachar bishlishi. Meaning when the Torah gives us, introduces us to the whole idea of zav, it says the word zav, followed by the word zavo, and then Vizachar is now coming to give us the third one. Okay, so it gives us the third one. So actually, Rechman l'nekeva. So by the Torah using the word Zachar, it's creating a hekesh between Zachar and Nekeva. And Rabbi Lazar, and what that means by that is that by a Nekeva, she becomes Tameh. Does it matter for the Nekeva whether there is external stimulation or not? So for a woman, it does not matter. So, according to the Chachamim, for the third discharge of a man, it takes on the same halachas of the third discharge of a woman. Just by like the third discharge of a woman, it will make her a Zava Gedola, whether there was or was an external stimulation. According to the Chachamim, same thing is true by a man. Whether there was or was not external stimulation for that third discharge, he has to bring a carbon. And Rabbi Lazar Darsh Esin. And Rabbi Lazar, he darshens the S of the Torah. Hazav Chada, S Tarti, Zovo Tlas, Berivi, Akshirachmal and Nekeva. So, in other words, you get to three before you get to the word Zachar. How did you get to three? Because you counted S as one of the three. So that means, according to Rabbi Eliezer, each one of the three original discharges of the man has to be without external stimulation. So each one of them needs a bedika to know whether there was or wasn't external stimulation. You're, according to Rabbi Lazar, you're only going to bring the carbon if all three of them come out without external stimulation. So that's the nekuda machlokes between the Chacham and Rabbi Lazar. It's just a question of whether or not discharge number three is with or without external stimulation. Okay. But again, though, the Gemara has now still defended Rav Huna. Rav Huna's position is that the first discharge of a Zav will make the man Tameh, even if it comes out with external stimulation.
Wouldn't the Chacham say that even if the first one was without external stimulation, it would still count?
With
only the third one doesn't matter?
But the first two have to be without, according to the Chachamim. Tashma Rabbi Yitzchak Amar Vahalo Zabichla Balkari Hayavalama Yatsalaka Lavalachme Olav. The Gemara quotes another Braisa. The Braisa here quotes Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak being a Tana. And he says, Zav is included in Balkari. Why does the Torah separate the two? Lahakel Olav Lachme Olav. Because Zav produces a Kula, Zav produces a Chumra. Laka Olav Sheimatame Beonis Lahachme Olav Shehu Osem Mishkav Umoshav. Okay? The kula is that it's zav is only going to be metame if it is not beones, not with external stimulation. And the chomer is it creates tumas mishkav moshav. Now, Amos. Ilema b'riya shniya hechava b'chlal b'akeri. So the Gemara says, now what are we talking about? We're talking about the second discharge. You see, by the second discharge already, we're nowhere in the b'akeri camp. Meaning b'akeri is only discharge number one. The only time that we compare Balkari with Zav is only by discharge number one. That's when they're the same. So Ela Pshita Briya Rishonu. So we're talking about the first Riyah. Viktani Lahakel Lav Shena Matame Bonus. And meanwhile, we're comparing them by the first Riyah. And what are we saying? Zav is only Matame, only Shiloh Bonus without external stimulation. This is going to be difficult for Rav Huna, because Rav Huna says that for that first discharge, it's metame even with external stimulation. So v'tizba lachmei alav shu osa mishkav amoshav. So b'ri rishona bar mishkav amoshav. The Gemara says, and that's not a good pshat. In fact, it's not the right pshat. And I know that because one of the points that Rabbi Yitzchak was trying to make in the Braisa is that it's metame b'mishkav amoshav. Now, the Gemara points out, that's not true by Riya Rishona. In other words, by the Riya Rishona of a Zav, he's not a Zav Gamor. Meaning, he's a Zav in waiting. He's a potential Zav. meaning he had his first Zav issuance, but that doesn't make him a Zav Gamor, and his Mishkav or Moshav status won't begin until the second one. So, Alahachi Kama Rebbe Yitzchak. So the Gemara says that we're going to have to reinterpret this brisa like this. Meaning, on the first issuance, Zav and Balkeri halachically will be treated the same. It's only upon the second issuance are they going to be different than one another. And now what are the differences? For the second Zav discharge, it has to be without external stimulation. And for the second Zav discharge, he now will be Tame with Mishkav Moshav. Period. So the Gemara has defended Rav Huna. So again, now let's just quickly review. It comes out now that according to Rav Huna, when a man has a discharge, a first Zav discharge, and again, we know it's not Balkari, it's Zav. In fact, the Gemara, in just a moment, we'll talk about the differences. When he has his first Zav discharge, so even though we'll call it a Zav discharge, it will take on the legal rules of a Balkari, which means that a Balkari will make the man Tameh, whether it comes with or without external stimulation. By the first Zav discharge, same thing is true. It will come with or without external stimulation. Additional to that, we're going to say like we said earlier, even though the Gemara didn't make this point, but let's make this point again for us to review. For a Balkari discharge, he becomes Tameh. The keri itself, the semen itself, is also going to be an avatuma, but only through maga, only through contact. The same thing is true with that first Zav discharge. That first Zav discharge is only going to be Tameh b'maga. It will not be Tameh b'maga v'masa until the second discharge. Only at the second issuance is it going to be Tameh b'maga uv'masa. Okay?
The consequences of Ziva was worse initially. Why are we changing it to become less severe?
Only for the first discharge.
No, but why?
Why? Because the Torah puts it in the same camp as Balkari. So in other words, its legal status is going to be the same as Balkari for the first discharge. Only with the second discharge is it have a new identity. At the second discharge now, it is no longer compared to a Balkari. It is now a totally new entity, a totally new identity. Now we call it Zav, Zav Gamor. It's a definitive Zav. Where? It's going to become Tameh b'maga v'masa, whether you touch it, whether you carry it. The man who issued it is going to be a Zav Gamor. He needs to count 7 clean days. Anything he sits on is going to be Tameh to the same degree he is. In other words, he now has a totally new identity. At the first issuance, it didn't really have an independent identity. It shared the same identity as a Balkari.
When you say Be'ones, the second time Be'ones, it's still not considered Zav, right?
Correct. In other words...
So that wouldn't create a loophole for the Zav to...
It's a Kula. It is a leniency, and that's exactly the point that Rabbi Yitzchak makes.
That he can eat something to have it...
In other words, if he causes this to come out of him, so he's not going to be Tame. You're right, that's a Kula. It is a... You want to call it a loophole, that's fine, but that's part of the definition.
Is that something recommended to do, or is it not recommended to do?
Not recommended, but in other words, it won't make him Tame.
I mean, it would be better for him to be the owner's side than to be Zavah.
Correct.
Then he doesn't have to be in Korban and everything else.
Correct. Amar Rav Huna, the Gemara continues, Zav Doma Lemei Batzik Shel Seorim. Okay, and here you go. Here you have it. The Gemara Nida Daf Lamed Hey Amid Beis talks about the physical differences between Zav versus Keri. So the actual Zav discharge looks like Batzik Shel Seorim. It looks like the water of barley bread. Meaning when you make barley bread and you're soaking the barley in water, so it comes out with some sort of color. Ichveznisht. You could try this at home. Zov ba mi b'sar ha-meis. Also, it comes out from the man while the man is not erect. That's the two signs of Zav. Shichvat zera ba mi b'sar ha-chai. Shichvat zera only comes from a man who is erect. Zov diha vidome leluvan beitza samuzeris. The Gemara gives another way to try to identify differences between Zav versus Balkari. Zav is clearer. It looks like the white of an egg that's spoiled. Shichvat zera kishura. Shichvat zera is a thicker substance. And the Dama Leluvan Beitza Sheinu Muzeris. It looks like the white of an egg that's not spoiled.
Question.
Okay, no questions now. Meaning, no questions on that. You have questions about other things. That's fine. I don't know these color differences.
How do they deal with the young person, a wet dream in their sleep? How do they deal with that?
What do you mean? How to deal with it? He's tummy. It's tummy.
He's Balkari.
Yeah, it's a Balkari.
And now my question is about omelet recipes.
Okay, good. She'eno muzeres dami yolesh lo tavla. Okay, we move on. Okay, that was part one of today's daf. So part one of today's daf dealt with the differences between Zav and Balkari. It dealt with physical differences. That's the last thing that we just covered, quoted to us by Rav Huna. And in terms of halachic differences, so we spent a lot of time now discussing and learning about the halachic differences between Zav versus Balkari. For that first issuance, we're now going to say, conclusively, as the Gemara concluded, there really is much of a difference. Meaning for the first issuance, Zav and Balkari are pretty much the same. It's only after now you have your second Zav discharge where now it gains this new identity of being as he becomes a Zav Gamor. The actual discharge now is considered Zav Gamor, and now there are fundamental differences. Okay.
The Mishnah is Zav, Zavim, or is that what it's called?
Yes. Mesechta Zavim. It's in Seder Taharas. You're not missing it. It's there.
It's small.
Keep.
What is the things that you do? They ask him, did you jump? Did you eat these? Oh, here it is. What Mishnah is it?
Which Mishnah did we just learn together? About the Bedikah?
Yeah, they ask him if
the second Perek of Zavim. Okay. Let's move on. Dama Yolesh Lo Tavya Tanya Amar Lem Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. Okay, now we got to switch gears now. We're talking about a woman who's given birth. Okay, so we're right. Everyone now put on a new thinking cap regarding the woman who's given birth. They give birth to a boy, a woman's tummy for 7 days, followed by being tahor for 33 days. Now, when I say being tahor, I don't mean she's actually tahora. She's not.
She can't.
Wait one second. She can't go into the Beis HaMikdash. She can't eat karban. She's not really tahora, but she's tahora in the following sense. First of all, the blood that comes out of her during those next 33 days, that's not dam tamei. It's dam tahor. Meaning that blood is not itself is not going to be an avatuma. Moreover, she can be with her husband. Meaning despite the fact that she's bleeding now for these next 33 days, she could be with her husband. Okay. If she has a girl, 14 days of being Tamea, followed by 66 days of being Tahora. But again, it's the same point. For those next 66 days, she herself is not really totally Tahora. She can't go into the Beis HaMikdash. She can't eat Karban, but the blood that comes out of her during those next 66 days are Dam Tahor, and she could be with her husband now for those next 66 days, even if she bleeds. Now, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai have the following debate. What if? Let's just talk about her having a boy, just to make this discussion simple and streamlined. What if after her seventh day she doesn't tov on the mikvah? Note, she's supposed to tov on the mikvah, meaning that when she transitions from day 7 to day 8, when she goes from her dam tum, from her yamei tumah to yamei tahara, she needs to tov on the mikvah. But what if she doesn't? So we have a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Remember the two positions? This takes us back to the Mishnah on Lamed Amud Aleph. So Beis Shammai says that for this woman who didn't tov on the mikvah, Dama Yulesh Lo Tava Beis Shammai Armim Karoko Kamei Mei Raglaha, the blood that comes out of her is treated like a mayan. It's treated like a secretion, like a bodily secretion. It's treated like her spit, like her urine. It's treated like a bodily secretion, which means that it gives off tumah, right? If she didn't tov on the mikvah. The only distinction that we could say is that it gives off tumah only when it's wet, not when it's dry. But we treat it like a bodily secretion. And what was the position of Beis Hillel? Beis Hillel in the Mishnah says, "Mitame lach v'yavesh." It's dam tameh. We treat it like dam tameh. Meaning she doesn't tov on the mikvah from day 7 into day 8. It's as if this is blood from day 7.
And that's Beis Hillel?
That's Beis Hillel. Meaning that you need, in order for her status to change, she needs to tovel in the mikvah. That's the position of Beis Hillel, who obviously takes a more machmir position than Beis Shammai. It's one of those It's one of those unusual and rare occurrences where Beis Hillel comes out to be more machmir than Beis Shammai. What we're going to now learn in a braisa is a little dialogue between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel over this very issue. Tanya Amar Lem Beis Hillel Beis Shammai Yata Modin Benita Shalotav Lav Rasa Adam Shei Tamea. So we start off with a very good argument by Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai, let me ask you this. Let's talk about a woman who's a nida. Okay? She's a nida for 7 days. Now, on the eighth day, after, and she's not bleeding anymore, on the eighth day, can she be with her husband if she didn't tovel in the mikvah? The answer is absolutely not. Her status of nida continues until she tovels in the mikvah, even without blood anymore, even without bleeding anymore. So you see that toveling in the mikvah is a status changer. So Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai, so once you agree with me that she needs to tovel in the mikvah in order to change status, so how can you disagree with me over here? Meaning, we're talking about a woman postpartum. She's going to now go from having dam tameh to dam tahor. But don't you agree with me that she needs to tovel in the mikvah in order for her status to change? Yeah, that's a good point. Amar lem Beis Shammai lo. Im amartem b'nida shafilo tavla v'rasa tameha tamar b'yela shim tavla v'rasa shi tahora. So Beis Shammai says back to Beis Hillel, I see a big difference between a nida and a yoledes. Look, by the nida, after day 7, let's even say she tovels in the mikvah, and let's say then she bleeds after that. Okay, what's going to be with that blood? It's dam tameh. Now, what is it? Is she a zava? Is she a nida again? Don't get too lost in the details. Meaning, the point is very simple. By dam nida, she tovels in the mikvah, she bleeds again, she's back to being tameh. But let me ask you a question. By yoledes, she tovels in the mikvah, and she bleeds again. Is she tameh? No. So Beis Shammai says back to Beis Hillel, don't you see a very fundamental difference between dam nida versus dam yoledes? Dam nida, she bleeds again after she tovels in the mikvah, she's back to square one. She's back to being tameh. By dam yoledes, that's not true. So Amru Lahem Yoledes Bezof Tochiach Shim Tavla V'rasa Lachem Esfirasa Tahara Lo Tavla V'rasa Tameya. So Beis Hillel says back to Beis Shammai, well, how about this? Meaning, your point is good, but what about Yoledes Bezof? Right, that case which we talk about often, even though it's quite unusual, the case where before the woman gave birth, she becomes a Zava Gadola. 3 consecutive days of bleeding. And then she has a baby. Now, in order for her to transition from her Yemei Tumah to Yemei Tahara, she has to wait her 7 days. Let's say she had a boy. She has to wait her 7 days of Yemei Tumah. And then what does she need to do? She needs to count Shiva Nekiyim. Because prior to her having the baby, she was a Zava Gadol. She needs to count Shiva Nekiyim. So Beis Hillel says back to Beis Shammai, now if you consider this case of Yoledes Bezof, so V'rasa tamei tamar b'yoledes v'shim tavla amar elham yoledes bezof techich shim tavla v'rasa la'achi yimei sfira tahora lo tavla v'rasa tameya. Don't you agree with me that she doesn't tovel in the mikvah, she's going to be tamei? So amar elham hu adin v'hu atshuva. So Beis Shammai says to Beis Hillel, so what? Meaning, I agree with you. But you know why I agree with you over there? Because she was a Zava Gadola going into this. Meaning, before she had the baby, she was a Zava Gadola. So, yeah, of course, if she bleeds after having given birth, she's going to be Tameh. But that's because she's a Zava Gadola. But I'm telling you, though, that if you take Zava Gadola out of the equation, and you just talk about her being a Yoledes, so after day 7, her status changes, period. She doesn't need to tovel in the mikvah in order to have a status change. Okay. Now, via tshuva. Lamamad depili v'hatanan. Then the Gemara says, now, here's a problem. We have a following Mishnah. That Beis Shammai Beis Hillel agree by Yoledes Bezof that whatever comes out of her, the bleeding that comes out of her, is metame lach v'yavesh. So the Gemara says, lo kasha, kasha safra, kasha lo safra. So the Gemara says, there's no difficulty. Meaning, if after giving birth, and after Shiva Nekiyim, after 7 days of Yemei Tumah, and she doesn't yet count to Shiv Nakim, and she bleeds, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel agree. But it's very simple. Of course they agree over there, because she didn't count her Shiv Nakim. Once she counted her Shiv Nakim, and now she's taking care of her Zava Gedola, because she counted her Shiv Nakim, so we're back to a machlokus between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Where Beit Shammai says she counted her Shiv Nakim, now her status has changed, meaning this is Dam Tahora. And a Beit Hillel will say no. In other words,
she hasn't gone to the mikvah
yet, and you need a mikvah in order to get a status change. The Hatanya and the Gemara says, and by the way, this is not just, I'm not just conjecturing over here, this is absolutely correct. In fact, look at the following brisa. Yo lesbizov shesafa velo tavla virasa hachu Beit Shammai l'shita san, o Beit Hillel l'shita san. The brisa says it, that a woman who is a yo lesbizov, and after having given birth, she goes through her Yemei Tumah, and she counts her Shiv Nakiyim, and she doesn't need a tovel in the mikvah, everyone's entrenched in their position. Beit Shammai will say her status changes. Beit Hillel says her status does not change until she tovels in the mikvah. Okay. So far, so good.
That's interesting. It has a right.
Yeah. Now, here we go now with one of the most fundamental debates that take place in the Masechta of Nida. It's a very interesting debate. Machlokes Amoraim between Rav and Levi, first generation Amoraim. And the debate basically will go like this. I'm going to introduce the debate before I read it inside the Gemara, just so that we're acquainted, well aware. We are aware. Look, a woman who gives birth, she gives birth to a boy, so for 7 days she's Tamei. Right? Which means that all the blood that comes out of her is Dam Tamei. It's Metamei Lach V'Yavesh. She herself is Tamei, she can't be with her husband. Okay? Then comes day 8. The evening of day 8, she tovels in the mikvah, and she can be with her husband. And she can be with her husband for the next 33 days. You remember how we discussed at the end of the third parak, one of the reasons why, even though we don't normally seek out Tamei Hakra, but one of the reasons why she's tar on day 8 is so at the Bris Milah, the husband and wife can be happy. Okay? Gemara said that. But on day 8 now, meaning when I say day 8, I mean the evening of day 8, she tovels in the mikvah, she's with her husband. And she's with her husband now for the next 33 days, even if she bleeds. Okay. So I'm going to ask you a simple question, and this is going to be the rest of today's daf. What happened? meaning, was there something physically changing about that blood? Meaning, she bled on day 7, she's bleeding on day 8. Is that the same blood? And it's just simply Xeras HaKosav. The Torah declares that on day 7 when she bleeds, that's Dam Tamei. On day 8 when she bleeds, that's Dam Tahor. Or is there an actual physiological change in the woman where the bleeding on day 7 is not the same physiological bleeding as the bleeding on day 8? Meaning that there is some actual physiological change in the woman that makes her blood of day 7 different, biologically, physiologically different than day 8. Now, what Levi's going to say, the words of Levi are going to confuse us all. He's going to say, shtei mayanot. It's two pipes. Okay? To give a terrible analogy, it's like, in other words, every sink, where there are two pipes bringing the water in, one cold water and one hot water. And so, in other words, I turn off one pipe and I open up another pipe. Okay? That's the way Levi says it. Now, I don't think even Bizman HaGemara, they actually thought that there were two pipes, right, that were letting the blood out. Shtei Mayanos is just simply a way that he's using to describe that there's an actual physiological change in the woman. But I don't think even he, Levi, thought that there were actually two pipes there. Okay.
Secretion.
Right, or two different causes of secretion. In other words, the larger point, which I don't want to get lost in the language, is that there actually is a physiological change. Okay. So, Rav's position will be the former position that I described, and Levi's position will be the latter. Which means that according to Rav, Mayan Echad, it's all the same blood. It's just that the Torah points to it on day 7 and says, that's Dam Tamei. And the Torah points to it on day 8 and says, that's Dam Tahor. That's all. Meaning, Xeris HaKosov. I'm going to explain. Right? Without there being a Nafkamina, there's no point in having this discussion. You're right. Your point is very well taken. And Levi's position is, Shtei Mayanot. It's a physiological change in the woman. The bleeding on day 8 is a totally different bleeding physically than the bleeding on day 7. Good. That is the machlokas from here, where we're starting right now in the Gemara, 4 wide lines down, until the bottom of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. The Gemara discusses this machlokas, and the Gemara will conclude, to make a long story short, the Gemara is going to conclude like Rav. Okay. Now, to Ben's question, what's the difference, right? Why do we care? So the Gemara will say this, and again, I'm just saying it outside first, and then we're going to see it inside in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to say it like this. Let's say the woman is bleeding on day 7, postpartum, and she is continuously bleeding. It's a continuous drip that's going from day 7 into day 8, meaning she didn't stop whatsoever her bleeding from day 7 into day 8. Now, according to Rav, did she go through a status change?
Yes.
Sure. Absolutely. Because Rav will tell you, who cares? The Torah just simply assigns...
It's a function of time.
That's it. According to Levi, you know there must be a break between the bleeding on day 7 and bleeding on day 8. Because Levi's of this position that it's two different pipes. There's a physiological change. According to Levi, you need to see one pipe. I'm using the language that he's using, even though I myself kind of understand it's not really pipes. But you need to see one pipe turn off and the other pipe need to turn on. Meaning from Levi's perspective, there actually has to be a break in bleeding between day 7 and day 8. And if there isn't, so day 8 still is a continuation of day 7.
How would you establish that break?
And, that's a good question, I'm not sure I know the answer. And on the back end, it's the same story. Where, let's say now after having a boy, she's bleeding on day 41, postpartum. And let's say it was a continuous bleeding from day 40. Meaning day 40, she's bleeding, until right through to day 41. Okay? According to Rav, what's the story with her bleeding on day 41?
Nida.
She's a Nida. Right. According to Levi, that's still Dam Tahor. Where according to Levi, you need to transfer back to the original pipe, to her first pipe. There needs to be a break in the bleeding for us to say that the bleeding on day 41 is a different bleeding. Okay. Someone got it? Let's see it inside. Itmar. Rav Amar Mayan Echadu Atorah Tam Asav Atorah Tarasav V'Levi Amar Shnei Mayanos Heim Nistam Atamei V'Niftach Ator Nistam Ator Niftach Atamei. So the Gemara spells it out for us. Machlokes between Rav and Levi. Rav says one pipe. Levi says two pipes. My Beinayu Ika Beinayu Shofas Mitoch Shiva La'achar Shiva O Mitoch Arba'a Asar La'achar Arba'a Asar O Mitoch Arba'im La'achar Arba'im Umitoch shmonim la'achar shmonim. So the Gemara says, and the practical difference would be, as I just laid out, where she continued to bleed from day 7 to day 8, day 14 to day 15 if it were a girl, day 40 to day 41 if it were a boy, day 80 to day 81 if it's a girl, l'rav reisha l'kula v'seif l'chumra. Now for Rav, it results in a kula and a chumra. Kula on the front end, chumra on the back end. Meaning, for Rav, she bleeds on day 7 and she bleeds right into day 8.
She's taller.
She bleeds on day 40 and she bleeds right into day 41. She's a nida. And for Levi, reisha l'chumra v'seif l'kula. And for Levi, it's going to go the other way. For Levi, it's going to be a chumra and on the front end and a kula on the back end. Okay, and meisve. Now, that's it. We're done. We're so not done.
Serious.
Yes.
Levi, how long would you let this thing go on for?
I would say indefinitely, but I only say that because I don't know otherwise. Okay, now, when I say we're done, it means that we have a lot more to go. But what I mean by that is, from this point forward, all the Gemara is going to do now is basically take shots at Levi, take one shot at Rav. It really will be much more. In other words, if this were a boxing match, Levi would lose. Levi's going to take a lot more punches. And by the way, the Gemara is going to conclude that the halacha follows like Rav. Okay? But we're going to quote Mishnayos and Brysos.
You just said that you went with the chumras of both.
Who said that? I said that?
The Gemara just said that you go with the chumra of both.
No, the Gemara says that If you take each position, one will end up being a kula and one will be a chumra. It's just a question of whether it's on the front end or on the back end. But there will be a position at the end of this whole discussion where the Gemara will say, you know what, let's adopt the chumras of both. But Rav will tell you, no, be make on the front end and be machmir on the back end. Okay. We're not good on time. Is time over right now? That's wonderful. Okay. So, okay. We'll stop here. Tomorrow we start off with the Gemara's challenges against the Levi and Rav. That takes us to the bottom of Lamed Vav and Aleph, and then we start off with the next Mishnah and the next Sugya.